Well, here we go again. Another week rolls to an end, 5 p.m.
Round and round we go.
Friday, and it's time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Of course, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales-Ryan, here as well. We're going to be with you for the next hour, presenting what we call Transistor Days. This is a series now that we've been doing for over a year.
A never-ending series.
Well, it's ending. In fact, that's that's actually the point. We are finally, this is our first show covering the last year of the series. We started in 1955 and worked our way up playing like our favorite top 40 pop songs and a couple of great misses for fun along the way.
Do we have a count on how many episodes we did?
This is show number 58.
Ooh.
I could give you a count on how many songs we're going to be playing. It's going to be, some. I believe the total is like 747 to be
total.
Exact. Total number of songs
okay.
in this series.
I thought you were going to say how many we're going to get in today, because that's always a dubious guess.
Hopefully I won't be talking. Hopefully, yeah, I can't get out of the way that much, not the way I talk. But with this show, we finally do reach the last year of this series. We planned on ending it in 69, and we will. It took us 58 hours to cover all of the great top 40 music from the beginning of the show until now, which covers January and March of 1969. Now, each show was intended to show signs of progress, or at least change, from its predecessor, to hear how time marched on and music would alter its way through time.
It's cool to have that.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about doing this. But to my ears, the change becomes really obvious as 1969 starts. I think this show is going to sound different from just even last week's show. Most of the forward trappings of the psychedelic era are in the past. The music gets a bit rootsier and introspective. A sense of self-consciousness starts to creep into our pop music around this time, setting the table for what is about to come in the next decade, the 70s. That'll be another series. We'll get to that, who knows, maybe in a couple of years.
Later.
But meanwhile, let's kick it off with our first song from January 1969. It was a number one hit for Sly and the Family Stone, their song Everyday People. Now, in retrospect, it seems hard to believe, in my mind, that despite the turmoil, the assassinations, and the lingering but flagrant existence of outright prejudice, the late 60s represented one of the most constructive times for communication between the races. For a while, the youthful ideals that had swept the country took precedence over our racial makeup. In every way, Sly and the Family Stone was the perfect symbol for this newfound, although temporary, brotherhood. Black and white, male, female members offered not only a literal representation of the time's ideals, but a musical stylization that crossed racial lines effortlessly. The song easily topped both R&B charts and the pop charts. It is not only a plea for racial tolerance, but also a plea to accept anybody who appears to be different or non-conforming. Different strokes for different folks. Sly and the Family Stone played music that was an appealing convergence of black and white styles and took their message full circle when they declared that she, we, and I am everyday people on American Radio 90.3 WHBC.
I'm everyday people.
such a joyous way to look at a problem that just appears to be relentless in America. And it's really sad that it's so relevant today to hear that song and think, man, we could definitely use more of that sort of positivity.
More unity.
Really, right now, that would be a wonderful thing.
Eat a peach for peace.
Great to hear that from Zion the Family Stone. Next up is a song that I think is maybe one of the best sing-along songs ever written, really, honestly. It has an arrangement that definitely emulated some of the best characteristics of the Motown sound and also a bit of the developing Philadelphia sound. There were a band called The Foundations. They were from England, not America, which I find it hard to wrap my head around. The song is written by Tony McCauley, who was one of the principals of Pi Records, and Mike Dabo, who was the lead singer from Manfred Mann. I mean, it's the song is English in every way. Talking about Build Me Up Buttercup.
Oh, I love that song.
I mean, how could that not be an American song? It's just crazy. Right? And check this out.
I thought that was a Tommy James song.
Really? Well, the seven members of the Foundations came together in London, but check this out. They were a veritable global village of instrumentalists. They came from Jamaica, Ceylon, Barbados, Trinidad, the Dominican Republic, and England.
Crazy.
They were all called home by this diverse band at one time or another. But eventually they all found their way to the capital of Great Britain's Commonwealth, and they recorded this amazing sing-along tune on American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Yell your lungs out. Singing.
If he really needed her, he would have gone and picked her up like a real gentleman.
There you go. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe in England it was a transportation thing. Who knows? Now that I know it's an English song, I can make excuses. Okay, like I said earlier, we play occasionally every now and then. I want to play a great miss to put things in perspective. And the next song up is actually by None other than Sammy Davis Jr.
Nice.
Now, growing up,
I bet my dad loved this song.
Probably. I bet a lot of our parents did. Growing up a white kid in the suburbs, I mean, there really wasn't that much interaction between the races. And Sammy Davis Jr. was probably one of the first, black contemporary performers that I had seen on TV as a little kid. I thought he was the most talented man in the world. The way he could sing and dance and emote. I just was I don't know. I mean, times change. it didn't help when he put out Candyman in 1972.
That's what I thought you were going to play.
No, because that was in the 70s. But that, okay. And that's just kind of my point.
And my dad did love that song.
The 70s were called the me decade. And in a way, Sammy Davis Jr. is the one who sets it up with this song, which became a top 40 hit. It was actually from a Broadway musical called Golden Rainbow. It was a Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet thing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't one of the most successful shows on Broadway, but for one reason or another, Sammy Davis Jr. picked up a track and sang it, and it became a huge hit. And boom, next thing you know, the 70s happened. the me decade. Thanks a lot, Sammy. Here he is performing I Gotta Be Me on American Radio 90.3 WHBC.
Gotta be me, I gotta be me, what else can I be but what I am? I want to live, not merely survive, and I won't give up this dream of life that keeps me alive. I gotta be me, I gotta be me, the dream that I see makes me what I am, that faraway prize, a world of success is waiting for me if I settle down, won't settle for less, as long as there's a chance that I can have it all. I'll go it alone, that's how it must be. I can't be right for somebody else if I'm not right for me. Be free, I've gotta be free, daring to try to do it or die.
I haven't heard that song in over a decade, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm okay with that.
It's over the top, of course.
Yeah, I mean, but you're right. You can interpret it from a whole bunch of different angles. And hear that there's a sense of empowerment in it, sung by a black man. You're making that point as it was playing. And I agree with you, Heidi. I mean, yeah, there are different angles. It's like the blind man and the elephant, I suppose. Anyway, next song.
I don't know that saying, but... okay.
Well, yeah. What if one man feels the trunk and gets one impression, another man feels the rough hide on the side, or another one grabs the tail, and they all think it's something different. You know, it depends on what angle you approach something to get your perspective on what it is. Now, obviously, I'm no rocket scientist, but I do know that there is a law in physics stating that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And what applies to physics often applies to popular music as well. For every trend that attempts to take music in a new direction, there's a counterforce that usually arises and attempts to do just the opposite. And I think Creedence Clearwater Revival was the counterforce to the San Francisco music scene. Everything
that,
about...
That was a good thing.
Well, yeah, I could see what you would
in
think
its
it
own
was.
Way.
I mean, San Francisco at this point in time was beginning to lose its unique identity. And in some ways, the huge popularity of Creedence Clearwater Revival may have contributed to its demise. I mean, he wiped out the whole idea of psychedelia and experimentalism and brought this rustic country boy simplicity to his music. Like, he proved, in my opinion, that the sound of the South was really a stylization that you could copy, like a dialect that he could adapt with careful attention to detail. He did it on Born on the Bayou, Bootleg, Keep on Chuglin'. All of them had the authenticity that could have fooled even the most knowledgeable Southern fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, Proud Mary is another great
Didn't
example of that.
Didn't fool my mother, though.
This, though, is a very... It's a confusing song. With all the different versions that have come out, understanding what the heck the song is about, God only knows. And Fogerty himself is a bit of an aloof loner, so he really didn't do any help at all in trying to straighten out some of the misinterpretations of what the song meant. So you're on your own, folks. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Creedence Clearwater Revival with Proud Mary. It's incredible how that song really does evoke a feel of the city of New Orleans with the river rolling through it.
Yeah, but
people.
They didn't fool my mom, and she was just a New Orleans housewife. They're not even from here.
You know, it's really right. I don't even think he even visited the city yet.
That's what my mom
when he wrote
said.
That. And yet, this is really a true story. It's off topic, but it just occurs to me. I mean, the very first time I had visited New Orleans was in the year 1989, and I found myself online to go see Al Green, waiting to get in to that theater right at the north part of the French Quarter there. And as I'm waiting
Sanger.
On, as the Sanger Theater, right, thank you. I'm waiting online, and who gets online in back of me but Bonnie Raitt?
That she would be in line because you're in the South.
Okay, fair enough. So I'm in line, and Bonnie Raitt stands right next to me, waiting online with us. So we start a conversation, and I'm a big fan. I'm trying to not act all, you know, totally
awestruck.
Easy for sheezy, whatever. And I'm just like, you're by yourself? She goes, I'm waiting on my date. He's going to be here any minute. So sure enough, about 5 minutes later, her date shows up. And who is it? It's John Fogerty.
Nice.
So I'm meeting John Fogerty in New Orleans, in line, on the Sanger Theater to see Al Green. One of the stranger, surreal moments of my life to be hanging out with two legends.
So you finally got around to coming to New Orleans.
Yeah, right. I did not say that to him. I didn't want to pick a fight.
Ha-ha.
All right. So, this next song has got quite the story here. We're back in England now, and this is a song that is pretty old for its time. It came out in February of 1969. That's when it hit the charts. But it was recorded all the way back in the middle of the Summer of Love in 1967.
Huh.
It's by the Zombies.
Now, they had
recorded She's Not There, Tell Her No, both really, really big hits here in America. But they didn't sell well at all in England. So when their next couple of singles did, you know, worse in England, their label, Decca, just put the band out to pasture, completely abandoning the American market that was developing for them, which is so incredibly illogical. In the middle of, like, the British invasion, they drop a band that's successful.
Right.
In America, one of the biggest markets. So luckily, CBS Records was not as short-sighted. So they picked the group up with a contract that allowed them a great deal of artistic freedom.
Nice.
And the first thing that they did was they recorded this gorgeous album that they called Odyssey and Oracle. And it was released at the height of pop psychedelia in 1967. This song was on it. Now, despite that this group didn't know how to spell the word Odyssey, they spelled it with an E instead of a Y, the album was a minor masterpiece, but the English continued their unabated ignorance of the Zombies, and the album might as well not have even existed. Columbia, which was CBS's American affiliate, saw no reason to think otherwise, and they decided to pass on its release, and they kept it in the warehouse. Was not even released in America. Then Al Kooper, the one with played with Bob Dylan, Al Kooper, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. They were a Columbia band. He was constantly raving about how great the Zombies were to the Columbia executives. And he was constantly trying to say, you got to put that album out, man. You know, he had a bit of an A&R pull with the label. So reluctantly, hoping that he would finally just shut up about it, I guess, they released the album in America and they issued two singles from it. The pressed vinyl sat in warehouses, generating no interest whatsoever. Disguised and beaten, the Zombies broke up, vowing to never regroup. And yet, inexplicably, more than a year after the album proved itself to be a dud, they issued a third single. This was when they released Time of the Season. More inexplicably, the publicly suddenly recovered from its somnambulism and heard Time of the Season for what it was, a brilliantly conceived and inarguably cool song with a contagious rhythmic hook. Although it had been recorded more than a year and a half earlier, at a time when the half-life of a pop song was about 6 days, Time of the Season was the hippest song on radio. How could that have happened? On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here are the Zombies.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to
take you in this time to promised lands, to show you everyone it's the time of the season for love.
What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich. Is he rich like me? Has he taken us
any time? Anytime
to show. To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why.
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.
Like me, has he taken?
Has he taken
any time?
Any time to show?
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why.
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.
That song is great in any year,
yeah.
You know, but it really is amazing when you think that, you know, recorded in the middle of 67 and it becomes a hit in, you know, 1969,
like
24 months later. That's pretty remarkable. Speaking of remarkable, so, I mean, this next story would be so sad if it wasn't basically due to his own self-indulgence, but David Ruffin had such a remarkable career as really pretty much the main vocalist of the Temptations.
Mm.
For 6 years,
right.
He was on more hit songs than almost any other band in that time period.
Hard to believe.
They kept up with and competed well with the Supremes all along the way. But it got to his head, and he insisted that the band change their name to David Ruffin and the Temptations. And I don't think Eddie Kendricks thought that was such a good idea, considering that he sang lead on about half of the songs.
Right.
And I doubt that the other three guys thought that was such a good idea either, since the others, they were responsible for starting the band in the first place.
Right. Get in line, buddy.
Exactly. So he started... He had to get to his head. He stopped going to shows. He would literally, like, it was almost like he was on strike. If it didn't suit him, he wasn't going to be there. So
oh, nice.
The band got fed up with it, and they literally fired him for unprofessional behavior. So he starts a solo career.
Okay.
And this is the song that begins the solo career. And it's also essentially the song that ended it. He had a 6-year run with the Temptations, and then as a solo artist, he has this one top 40 hit, and it takes him 6 years before he has another, and then he dies of a drug overdose. Done. What a sad story.
You let his ego get in the way.
David Ruffin with My Whole World Ended on American at Radio 90.3 WHBC.
my whole world is incomplete. 'Cause, honey, I can't see you no more. That was all that you said, baby. But you just might as well have placed a gun to my head. Baby, baby, I'm about to do it. My whole world ended the moment you left me. Yeah, baby.
Solid Gold Soul.
Oh, man. What a great song. It was slated to be a Temptation song until the band, well, until he got booted out. And I guess he was lucky that they let him keep that song for himself. But, and there was it, man. His last hit until 1975, and then he was gone. What a shame.
At least they weren't totally ruthless.
Right.
More than he deserved.
Now, we played a song by a San Francisco artist that sounded like he was from the South. Now we're going to play a song by a guy from the South with lyrics that sound like he maybe could have been from San Francisco.
It's a trade-off.
Exactly. Joe South wrote the song, composed the song, won the Grammy Award for Song of the Year with this song.
Yeah.
Features an electric sitar, which is such an amazingly cool instrument. It's like,
yeah.
You hear it. We played it on songs like Cry Like a Baby, Hooked on a Feeling. But Stevie Wonder used it twice, Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I Was Made to Love Her. It's just a cool thing. And I think that it reaches its apex here on this song with Joe South. Basically, I say it sounds like it could be a San Francisco song because he gets a little bit political and he gets in people's faces. And it's something that most Southerners tended to not do that. Hmm. So it's a strong message song called Games People Play on American Ed Radio 90.3 WHPC. Nice.
Every night and every day now, never me. meaning what they say now. They're never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da 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 da. Talking about you and me and the games people play now. Will we make one another cry? Break a heart and we say goodbye. Cross our hearts and we hope to die that the other was to blame. Whoa, but neither one will ever give in. So we gaze at an 8x10, thinking about the things that might have been. And it's a dirty, rotten shame. Whoa, la da 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 da. Talking about you. Walking up to you, singing glory hallelujah, and they try to sock it to you in the name of the Lord. They're gonna teach you how to meditate, read your horoscope, cheat your fate. For the most to hell with hate, come on, get on board. La da 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 da. Talking about you. Now wait a minute, look around, tell me what you see. What's happening to you and me? God grant me the serenity to just remember who I am. Whoa, cause you're giving up your sanity for your pride and your vanity. Turn your back on humanity. Oh, and you don't give up.
My first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy.
Oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, cause the woman that you love is gone. There's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life.
A whole lot of trouble.
Oh, so listen to me, get up off your knees, cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. The little girl know, wouldn't let her know that she made me feel like a clown. There are a whole lot of girls looking for a good man like you. Oh, but you'll never meet him if you give up now and say your life is true. Then she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Gotta be a man.
Hey.
You gotta take a stand. So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong. You better hold on.
play those two songs back to back because I felt, although, like I said, it's coincidence that songs land where they do in the series because it's judged completely by the chronology of events. But they have a similar, like there's a meaning there to both of those songs about manning up and doing the right thing. And
self-fortitude.
Yeah.
Of character.
And something about Jerry Butler, man. I just, that guy tears me up when I hear him. he, in a sense, he is like he's bookending this series. Mm. We played a song by him when he was in with Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions, where he sang lead all the way back in 1958, For Your Precious Love. So we sort of began this with Jerry Butler, and here we are, we're getting toward the end, and it's this, you know, we're ending here with him too. So he's a stunning artist, and I think criminally underrated. All right, time for another great miss.
Uh-oh.
Just got to drop this in here.
Let's get it over with.
Oh,
It's like taking your medicine.
I've said when we started the series, speaking of the beginning, that almost any time a band calls themselves the Four anything, it's usually bad news. Look out, the Four Freshmen, the Four Lads. I'm no offense to Brian Wilson or whatever else. Yeah, and of course there are exceptions, of course the Four Tops and such. But bands like the Four Lads, they would record a song like this song in 1955, and it was just syrupy then. So why on the planet Earth would a band called the Vogues think that it would be a good idea to re-record the song and release it in 1969? It's about as irrelevant as a pink unicorn.
I guess the heart wants what the heart wants.
It's just ridiculous. And I just can't even believe that this song. And why did people buy it? It became a top 40 hit. Somebody explain that to me. I know I'm here. I'm supposed to find reason. This is totally beyond my ability to comprehend how this song became a top 40 hit by the Vogues in 1969 called No, Not Much on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. You may have to hold your nose a little bit on this one.
I'm yours.
that brought on a terrible reaction on my part. I mean, what are these guys like living in a vacuum? They just stepped out of a time machine or something?
Oh my, you know, they had a hip song in the 60s. It's the band that recorded 5 o'clock World.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wasn't so bad. Turn Around, Look at Me. Yeah, that was pretty lame.
Wow.
But in this is 1969 and they Hello. Drag that up. Oh, it was really hard. It was painful to play
they
the whole thing
sang
through.
They probably that at family parties for their grandparents.
I apologize, everybody, but I just had to make the point that, you know, even, you know, in the middle of 1969 or in the beginning of 1969, something that irrelevant and absurd.
There was something in the water.
Would make the charts.
And it wasn't good.
Well, let's get back to what was good in the water, because most of it was. I mean, really, it was a great year. And a few shows back, we played a song by a South African artist. The original version of Grazing in the Grass by Hugh Masekela,
oh, yeah.
Right? Which is a great instrumental with a trumpet part and everything else, taken at a really cool slow tempo with the cowbell and everything else. It's really
more cowbell.
Kind of awesome. Well, there's this group, a vocal group that had gotten together that were affiliated with what would eventually become the Fifth Dimension. Marilyn McCrew and Lamont Necklemore were actually parts of their original band, but eventually, they went on to be a band of two couples resembling what the Fifth Dimension would be.
Okay.
But different people, different
okay.
people altogether.
All right.
And the band member, the leader of really of the band, Harry Elston, really loved the song by Hugh Masekela. So he wrote words.
Nice.
And they made up an arrangement and he spit it up and it became a totally different thing. And it was such, you know, like, you know, we talk about, you know, don't, if you're going to cover a song, do something new, do something
right.
unique to
yeah.
make it.
Make
well,
it your own.
Well, this is one of the most astounding versions of doing exactly that as I had ever heard.
Cool.
Because he reinvents the song so much that it almost makes you wonder what came first, the chicken or the egg. in this case, I can decidedly say, yeah, the Masekela version came first, but this version by the friends, by what they call themselves Friends of Distinction, is an absolute total creative masterpiece of a reinvention. On American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's the vocal version. New words for Grazing in the Grass on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Let's do it.
stunningly great rewrite, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Timeless imagery in those lyrics, too. I mean, you could just be forever, whether it's Victorian times, being on the banks of the Seine.
Wow, that's very
all
evocative.
All the way to like a person being in Central Park.
Yeah, enjoying yeah, a day off. All that. Ah, just a great rewrite of Grazing in the Grass. Well, we've got time for one more quick one. It's by the Guess Who. Now, the Guess Who were a Canadian band, a hard rock band from Canada, and they had released almost 20 singles up in Canada that were hits, and America had nothing to do with the band at all. They just never had a hit down here. And then they came up with this song, and the band didn't want to release it because it was a ballad. Like, we're not a ballad band. We're a hard rock band. But they put it out anyway.
All right.
And it became their first huge hit in America, written by Randy Bachman, the lead guitarist. Yes, Bachman of BTO and Bachman Turner Overdrive. And Burton Cummings, the lead vocalist. You know the song, These Eyes, on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. Thanks, folks. See you next week. Have a great weekend.
See another one like I had with you.